From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Take two violins, one viola, and a cello. Add three or four centuries of history, and you've got the string quartet. Some contemporary quartets cover pop songs, bring in bows, and beatbox. My guests today, the four young musicians of the Emergence Quartet, take it back the other way, to the beginning, the roots. This hour on Point, the birth of the string quartet with Emergence Quartet. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Where does the Baroque end of this musical history send you? And can you picture when this was cutting edge, the Radiohead or Kanye West of its day? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio, and what fun, are the four members of the Emergence Quartet, violinists Emily Dahl and Lisa Goddard. Emily, thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
Lisa? On viola, Zoe Kemmerling is here. Hi, Zoe.
Hi.
On cello, Emily Davidson. They've just finished a Concert City for the Society of the Historically Informed Performance Boston, acronym So Hip, called Birth of the String Quartet. Emergence Quartet, welcome to On Point. It's wonderful to have you all here. Oh, help us. We're going to hear all kinds of music in this hour, and we can't wait. But Emily Davidson, take us back to when this music was young. What did the world look like? What did its world look like? And where was it played, and for whom?
Chamber music as we know it, small ensembles, was not always a formal concert event. It was something that happened casually in homes with friends. Composers would try out new pieces with their companions and say, well, I know two violinists, a viola and a cellist, maybe I'll write a piece for them. It wasn't always such a formal affair, so we like to take that sort of conversational, relaxed approach to this repertoire instead of such a formal concert thing that it became.
What were they doing when the music was played? Were they tearing turkey legs off of roast turkeys? Were they dancing? Were they just sitting and enjoying a performance as in a small chamber concert?
Well, it's good you mentioned dance, because especially in the Baroque period, dance was an inherent part of their culture. And, you know, with no movies to go see and not much else to do, dancing was really a main activity of society. So composers were always using dances to inform what they were writing. And whether or not people were actually dancing to the music, they were familiar with all the dances that were being written in this music.
So when we listen, should we be able to kind of hear the sense, the tempo, the surround of dance in this early quartet music?
Absolutely. It's certainly not the type of dance that we think today that we hear in the club, but it is a type of dance, and you should feel inclined to want to move your body, whether it be slow or fast, and to sort of feel these rhythms ingrained in your footsteps when you're listening to this music.
I'm just curious. We're going to hear a lot here, but here you are, of all the music in the world you could be playing. I mean, you could be up there, I don't know, backing up Kanye or playing with Radiohead. I don't know what. Emily Dahl, why this? Why period music? Why this old, very early string quartet? Chamber.
Sure. I think for me, we're playing on gut strings. We have different bows.
Meaning period instruments as well.
Exactly. These instruments, you know, went through so many developments over the decades, the centuries. We are specializing in instruments that were more appropriate in the 17th century and 18th century.
Gut strings, meaning literally made out of the guts of...
Literally. I mean, not
cattle?
Catgut, as they're said, but cattle, beef...
Lovely.
And they're you know, difficult in some ways because they're very affected by the climate in which they're played. But I love them because they give sort of a rougher sound. You can get so many different colors compared to more traditional metal wrapped strings.
Today. Here we are back in the even 17th century at that point. Lisa, why this music for you?
As a classical musician, we're always playing old music mm-hmm. from throughout history. And I remember learning Bach and earlier pieces, and some of the writing doesn't really make sense on modern technology. And it was really eye-opening for me to go back and try with a Baroque bow and on gut strings. It made the music come to life and make a lot more sense.
Zoe, you've got the viola. I mean, that's kind of says old all on its own, at least to me. I don't know. But what's taken you back to dive in so deeply to this period music?
Well, I think for all of us, the string quartet is one of our favorite environments to be in. It's kind of like the holy grail of ensemble playing for string instruments mm-hmm. because it's such a friendly, welcoming environment. Where
and it's all yours. It's all string.
Exactly. We don't have to worry about keyboards. We're very right. very portable.
Right.
But the string quartet has such an august history. There are these masterworks of Beethoven, especially. His string mm-hmm. quartets are put on this pedestal. And every time we perform them, there's this double standard of expectation. Everyone knows them. Everyone knows how they should go. But there's also this pressure to do something new. But this is only part of the history of the string quartet. And at the beginning, it wasn't like that. It was sort of like the Wild West. Anything went, and people were experimenting all the time. And I think that kind of spontaneity is something that we've lost in classical music since the Romantic period.
So let's hear it. Let's feel it. I mean, take us all the way back. We think of Beethoven or Mozart or Haydn, especially when you say string quartet, sort of the father thereof. I mean, public radio listeners know plenty of Telemann, but that is back in the early Baroque part of this. Introduce us to him and a little bit about the first bit you're going to play for us, Emily Davidson.
Well, Telemann is, as you mentioned, a classic Baroque composer, and we don't think of him as someone writing string quartets. And this piece, actually, that we're going to play is not called a string quartet, but it is intended for two violins, viola, and cello. So you can see that he's intending the string quartet arrangement while
there's
it hasn't
even... There's the team. They're there. They're
exactly.
all there.
Mm-hmm. And Emily Dahl has a bit to tell us about this first excerpt that we're
yes,
going to
please,
play.
Yes, please, Emily.
Sure. Well, this first movement of the Telemann sonata is labeled a fettuoso, but in my opinion, it feels the most like a saraband. And sarabands were typically part of a Baroque dance suite.
Saraband, kind of a slow dance, Spanish
exactly.
Sensibility about that. A fettuoso, I don't know the meaning of that. What's it?
I would take it to mean sort of sensual and affected, you could sort of literally say.
Okay, we're affecting sensuality or maybe feeling it. Will you play for us?
Absolutely.
That's wonderful, and you're such good sports. Here we are. You're on top of yourselves in the studio. I mean, back in the day, I don't know where this would have been played, in someone's main room, maybe? Would it have been, would women have been playing in that time? It's 1700? I don't know when this was written exactly, right, that area.
I would think professionally women were not allowed to make a living in music. I know many instruments, flutes, cellos, they were considered indecent to be blowing or to be spreading your legs to play the instrument. Who knows if, you know, someone's sister probably picked up an instrument and maybe fiddled at home. I can imagine just in rooms there was beer flowing, wine flowing. I'm sure it was a great time just reading with friends.
Do you all picture professionals playing this at that time, something from Telemann in, I don't know, 17, 10 or 20 or 30? Or would it have been people just picking up their cello or their viola or their violin and joining in?
I think it was likely a casual affair at times because, like I said, most things were not always the concert experience the way they are today. This was a part of their regular life, just the way someone might pick up a guitar in their living room and have a sing-along with their friends. That was the equivalent back then.
So let's make some music. Let's just do it here. And in its Baroque quality, is this clearly the precursor to everything that follows in the realm of the string quartet? Can you still hear these footsteps as you go on down to Haydn and Mozart and Beethoven?
I think our next excerpt will actually be a great example of that.
We're going to have to wait until after a short break here to do that, because I've just got a minute before the break. So maybe you'll take us a little further on that bridge, and that's terrific. Telemann, I don't, is it, when you think let's play something, is that where your mind goes? Whose favorite is Telemann?
I particularly enjoy Telemann because he really he's a kind of quintessential Baroque composer in that he's always making the cello line into a sort of excited, interesting bass line. In the Baroque, and we'll talk more about this later, the bass line was actually quite important. We tend to think of melodies as the most memorable part of music these days. But we get to hear a lot about how important the bass was in the Baroque era as well.
We're moving through time with the string quartet. Emergence Quartet is with me in the studio, and what a pleasure it is. Emily Davidson, Emily Dahl, Zoe Kemmerling, Lisa Goddard, all here with their cello, their viola, their two violins. And we're looking at the roots of the string quartet. Listeners, you can join us. Is this your cup of tea, your passion? Two violins, a viola, a cello, walk into a room. What do you hear? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Emergence Quartet is here. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Behind me, music from composer Johann Friedrich Fasch. First movement, Largo, from his sonata for two violins, viola, and cello. What we call a string quartet. Played by my guest today, Emergence Quartet. They are in the studio, and how wonderful to have them here. Emily Dahl, Lisa Goddard, Zoe Kemmerling, Emily Davidson. Emergence Quartet, and we're talking about the roots of the string quartet. The roots music of Telemann, Fasch, Richter, Haydn, with the Emergence Quartet, four women on a mission to tell and play a story, a wonderful early music. Fasch, who followed Telemann, Fasch, who maybe gave way to Richter and on to Haydn. We'll hear all of that. We heard a little bit earlier in the first piece you played live here, Emily Dahl, from Telemann, with that sense of music focusing on the dancer's feet.
Absolutely. A saraband, as we were saying, is probably known as the sexiest dance of the Baroque era. For many years, earlier on, it was banned. Cervantes said it was maybe taken from hell. It was so
sensual. Too much physicality.
Yes. As a soloist dancer, their feet with every little flicker.
But Dulcinea, do the dance, please. Didn't he feel that?
Absolutely. But as we move forward in history, things calmed down a little bit, or at least there was a veneer of suitability towards the genteel. And further on, we'll see how the minuets, the gavottes, they all evolved into new forms.
We've got period instruments with us in the studio. Let's get another piece of Telemann before we plunge ahead. Zoe, introduce this piece for us. This is another sonata here for what we think of as a string quartet now, with a piece where Telemann's bringing in more, a little imitation here and a little counterpoint.
Sure. Well, this is actually the more upbeat movement that follows the one we just played. And imitation is one of the most basic ways of fitting together multiple voice works.
Imitation as in kind of, well, here's my version of that, and here's my version of that on this instrument, that instrument.
Yeah, it can even be more literal. There's a peppy little melody that goes through this movement. And you'll hear Emily Dahl start with that at the beginning, and then one by one we layer ourselves in until it's this complex web of melody. You can hear the melody horizontally, and also the harmony, how you hear it fitting together vertically. And the art of balancing the horizontal and vertical was called counterpoint, and that was one of the most fundamental skills of composers in the Baroque era.
It must have been exciting for them then. I mean, the counterpoint really sort of mixes it up. It sounds like excitement.
And it was also where they could show off how smart they were, because writing a fun, unexpected piece of counterpoint was the ultimate.
So see what I do with that. See how I answer what you've just played.
Exactly.
This is the Allegro movement. Telemann here, will you play? Beautiful. We've got strings aplenty in the studio with little George Philip Telemann. Lived 1681 to 1767, an Allegro movement there with Emergence Quartet. We've got gut strings, period instruments, and we're down in the root ball of the string quartet. All the counterpoint answering and elaborating there, embroidering, just wonderful. Monica's calling from Danbury, Connecticut. Monica, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Emergence Quartet.
Hi, Tom. I love your program today. Hi, ladies. This is really a treat for me. I just have a comment. Baroque music is my favorite type of music. For me, there's a logical, almost mathematical flow to the music, which seems to appeal to me on a very basic instinctual level. I trained as a ballet dancer and was familiar with a lot of this music, Telemann being one of my favorites. And I just wanted to say, when I was in college, taking a freshman requirement of music appreciation class, we had the Manhattan String Quartet come in as a favor and play for our class. For me, it was an absolute thrill I don't think it appealed very much to the jocks in the class. but I just want to say thank you for the music that you play. It's my favorite, and I just love it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Aww. Thank you so much, Monica. Thank you. That mathematical quality, we can all hear it. I mean, it makes Monica think of her ballet dancing. It always makes me think somehow of weaving, just weaving endlessly with new designs. Does it put you in a certain, I don't know, mathematically precise and woven frame of mind, or is that just a layman's perspective?
I think when I was in high school as a young cellist, I always felt most attracted to Baroque music, and the thing that struck me the most was that it somehow just made sense to me. And it's interesting because I hear other people disagree and they feel it's too complex, but at least for me, and it sounds like for Monica and for others, there is a certain natural quality about it where things happen and they feel expected and unexpected. There's a certain satisfaction you get out of the things that you hear, but there's still a lot of opportunity to surprise you as well.
Is this somehow organic out of the culture of the time? I mean, this is what they could do. They could sit around and embroider amazing things, weave amazing things, maybe musically too. They weren't making quantum physics leaps here, but they were elaborating incredibly on the world as they saw and knew it.
I think one of the reasons that Baroque music has that effect is because this is when tonal harmony really started to take shape as music is still built on today. Mm-hmm. So the idea of chord progressions, the musically literate will understand tonic and dominant. And though they didn't quite have that terminology in the Baroque era, they were setting up that sort of harmonic language that then continued through all the musical periods that followed and is still prevalent in pop music today. Some of the most popular progressions from the Baroque era you'll hear in all your favorite pop songs that are on the radio. So Baroque was really setting up music as we know it.
Listen to hip-hop today and what's behind it, and you can dig down and find the Baroque right there. It evolves. It moves. Let's go from Telemann to Johann Friedrich Fasch. And you've got a piece here, Lisa. Maybe you can introduce him and the progression that we're going to hear in Fasch from Telemann.
Yeah, so we talked earlier about imitative counterpoint in the Telemann, and in the Fasch, we'll hear a different take on that same technique. And in this one, there's a very close overlap between the imitation and the two violins in particular, and the excerpt we're going to play, play the same music a beat apart. So first, I'll just have Emily play the melody by itself.
Okay.
Thank you, Emily.
Johann Friedrich Fasch, 1688, 1758. German? Am I? Sounds
yes.
Like it anyway.
Was in Leipzig and offered
okay,
the same.
Okay, Austrian, but that neck of the woods. And then what will you do with it, Lisa, this melody?
Yeah, so now let's hear the two violin version where okay. We play the same melody a beat apart.
Lisa and Emily Dahl. Wow, just almost on top of each other, but not quite.
Right. So now let's hear Fasch's full development of this idea with the whole quartet.
Thank you. beautiful from Johann Friedrich Fasch, and the two violins just playing with each other like crazy there. Sounds like a more adventurous harmony than we heard in Telemann, and somehow a grandeur comes in here that reminds me of later classical.
Right. Fasch was definitely pushing the boundaries for his time, especially in the harmonic language and just in the evocative way that he conveys his ideas.
So if we were sitting and listening in, again, here, maybe we're 1740, would we have listened to Fasch? Whoa, where are we going here? This is hot. This is the new thing.
Absolutely. And it is unfortunate that, you know, modern audiences can't pick up on the same surprises because they're not in the same context of the time. But that's why it's so useful to hear other pieces from the time period and really see just how shocking this music was for its time.
Ron in St. Regis Falls, New York. Ron, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Emergence Quartet.
Well, hi, Tom. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. I listen to your show a lot. Etc., like everybody else does. I was mentioning that I fell in love with Baroque music, even though I grew up on a farm in northern New York, and I only had an opportunity to experience music in different places. And she was mentioning earlier about the mathematical precision, etc., and I hear that, and I've always heard that in gospel and blues, mm-hmm. and so many different things, and jazz. I mean, you could especially say, but jazz, they get into more advanced mathematics, maybe, whatever. But when I was living in Santa Cruz, I used to buy season's tickets to go to the Baroque Festival, and they always had them in these wonderful churches and places, and I was always mesmerized.
It is easy to be mesmerized, almost hypnotized with all this wonderful interweaving. Ron, thanks for your call. Keep listening. In Charleston, South Carolina, Camille is calling. Camille, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call and for having this program. I'm currently working on a thesis hypothesis utilizing music as a rehabilitative technique for neurologically based sensory processing difficulties.
Ooh, okay. Ambitious.
Necessary.
Mm-hmm.
The mathematics of sound and sensory processing difficulties associated both with children with sensory processing disorders and traumatic brain injury, as well as the emergent science in terms of Parkinson's, has also shown music to have an incredible impact. And I'm wondering from your guests if they have any suggestions. When I'm trying to find quartets or fantastic, and I love what I've heard. I'm wondering if there are any suggestions in terms of anyone who is doing or has done a progressive quartet where it starts off as a single instrument, builds into a duet, and builds the sound.
Let's ask. Our time is short before the break, Camille. Any ideas? Here we've got a ready therapeutic application, if you can prescribe it. What about something progressive?
Well, later in the hour, we'll hear a fugue by Richter, which does exactly what you're describing. It starts off with one voice playing a melody, and then the next voice comes in and plays the same melody on top of a accompaniment figure in the first voice, and then we each add as we go along. So we'll talk more about that particular form later in the hour. It sounds exactly like what you're describing.
Camille, in Charleston, hang on. We'll get there. Can you imagine this as therapeutic, knitting minds together somehow through music, Emily Davidson? Can you picture it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's wonderful about music is there is this mathematical, calculative sort of component, but there's also an emotional component as well. And I think for any kind of healing, that synthesis can really make a huge difference.
We're talking about the roots of the string quartet this hour, the roots music of Telemann, Fasch, Richter, Haydn, with the Emergence Quartet. All four with me in the studio this hour, two violins, a viola and a cello. It's just fantastic. Little Richter to go out on here, and you can join us, listeners. Can you imagine when this music was young and groundbreaking, unsettling, exciting? Where does this music take you now? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook with the Emergence Quartet. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Thank you. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the roots of the string quartet this hour with the Emergence Quartet, four women on a mission to tell and play a story of where these wonderful string instruments emerged in quartet form, where they took us over the centuries. Behind us right here, Franz Xaver Richter, Quartetto 2 in B-flat major. Emergence Quartet is with me in the studio. Two violins, viola and a cello, Emily Dahl and Lisa Goddard, Zoe Kemmerling on viola, Emily Davidson on cello, and it's just wonderful to have them right here. You can join us as well in this hour. Do you see tapestries and wooden shoes when you hear this? Candlelight and shadowy halls? In 300 years, will somebody be listening back to Jay-Z playing Timberlake? Will they still be listening to this? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Rick in Williamsburg, Virginia. Rick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I appreciate your program today and enjoying every bit of it. I wondered if your guests have any comments about how this music that was developing in Europe at the time, which was innovative and kind of radical, how it might have been, how it was being received in the American colonies.
Did it leap the pond, and how? That's a wonderful question. I don't know if we're plugged in well enough, but it comes out of Williamsburg, Virginia, a good place for the question to originate. Would this have traveled in captain's quarters on the ship or elsewhere right across? Was this the music that did it flow quickly into, I don't know, all sets of society, enough of society, do you think, that it would have jumped the pond, been in the shores of the New World?
I think that early America, the groups were sort of so iconoclastic that they developed a lot of their own music. I don't think there was a lot of crossover, but speaking of leaping the pond, the dance that Emily Dahl was talking about earlier, the sarabande, mm-hmm. that actually has origins in the New World, in South America and the Caribbean, I believe. So as soon as there were, you know, trade routes and exploration established, there was musical crossover.
I mean, we think of the great age of sail, and Patrick O'Brien shows us in his Master and Commander and all those, you know, they're always cracking out the violin or whatever they've got on board in captain's quarters or elsewhere to take it with them. Certainly, people played instruments and made their own music. That was the way to have it, and relished and valued that. I don't know if we've got a perfect answer for you there. It wasn't the time of the top 40 being broadcast everywhere, but surely music traveled. I want to go back and catch one step here that you've got in a little more from Johann Friedrich Fasch. You've got another sonata here where the cello plays a very important line in the continuo. Help us, Emily.
So in the Baroque period, the bass line, or the lowest part of the music, was generally called a continuo part, and it was represented by two instruments, typically a sustained instrument like a cello, viola da gamba, or bassoon, mm-hmm. and then a chordal instrument that filled out all the harmonies in addition to the bass line, so a keyboard instrument like harpsichord or organ, or perhaps something like a lute or a theorbo. And the reason the continuo section was so important is composers were actually writing bottom up. They were writing this bassline continuo part first.
The bassline first, and then everything else elaborated on top.
Exactly. So the harmonic progression and the movement of the bassline was actually the most important part of the music. And we really hear this exemplified in pretty much all Baroque music we listen to, and we transition a bit out of that as we move into the classical period. So this slow movement from Fasch really represents shocking harmonies and shows how harmony was such an important expressive device of the Baroque.
We're greedy to hear it. Dive in. Thank you. pleasure. First movement, Largo, there from Fasch's, one of his sonatas for two violins, viola and cello. Emergence Quartet is with me in the studio. You know, let's plunge right forward because it's just such a rare treat to have all of you here with all of your instruments and all of your insight and beautiful musicianship. I mean, we hear there, as you say, those how expressive those harmonies are, how they keep changing through the piece. Can we dive right ahead? You mentioned a fugue earlier. I think our caller Camille asked about this sort of progressive treatment. You've got something from Richter here. Introduce it for us, Lisa.
Right. So I mentioned earlier that the structure of a fugue is a sort of strict form of imitative counterpoint, where one instrument introduces what's called the subject, which is a melody. In this case, it's 8 bars long. And then the rest of the voices enter each on their own. And virtually all of the material in a fugue comes from that one subject. So to start us off, I'm going to ask Emily to play the subject for us. Thanks, Emily. Other restrictive forms, like thinking about a sonnet form in poetry or even on Twitter, the 140-character form, the fugue is a compositional technique that puts a certain restriction, but it's been used throughout history by many, many different composers, and it's a very clever, almost mathematical way of writing a piece.
So put a frame around it, like iambic pentameter or exactly. 140 characters and see what you can do. Great, let's hear it. Flying through time with Richter there, wonderful counterpoint in fugue form there. That subject, again and again, different ways, overlapping.
Upside down, upside transposed.
Down, backwards, a really kind of elaborate drama emerging there. Richter 1709 to 1789, maybe they played that for George Washington, I don't know. Emergence Quartet is playing for us. Dan in Ontario, Canada. Dan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks for the introduction for that music. It's fantastic. I know how difficult. It's all single note and all put together and lots of melody. And, you know, as a musician over the years up here, you know, musicians today are starving for melody. It's just music has become so monotone and, you know, these people are doing fantastic with it. So I just wanted to call and thank them. And thank them for giving us a little bit of a background, because I have heard Baroque music, but I I didn't know much about it, but I can hear it, and it's very, very wonderful. It's full of melody, and melody is emotion. So,
Dan, I'm glad you enjoy it. We enjoy it, too. We're right there with you on that. Our time grows short, and we don't want it ever to end. We'll plunge ahead with us to Haydn. I mean, this is the big daddy here. Why do we associate Haydn as, like, the father of the string quartet? If you've got all these others down earlier, doing the earlier work, what put Haydn's name all over this form?
Well, speaking of melody, actually, that's a great transition into the classical period, because we've been hearing all this counterpoint and tapestry work and interweaving. But one of the remarkable things about Haydn was that he integrated melodies with a lot of other complex stuff going on. And in this next Haydn selection we're going to play, you can really hear how the first violin soars with melody, and his melodies are very elegantly crafted and satisfying.
Haydn, who lived on into the 19th century to 1809. Here's an adagio, quartet number 4, G major, the adagio movement. Let's hear it. Adagio from Quartet number 4, G major, the third movement there from Franz Joseph Haydn. We hear that conversation so beautifully elaborated there. And I mean, it sounds so spontaneous, each of your instruments with their own kind of voice and character and pattern. How fantastic. Emily Dahl and Lisa Goddard on violin, Zoe Kemmerling on viola, Emily Davidson on cello. They are Emergence Quartet. What a gift you all bring to us today and every place you play. There's an attitude in this music that I wonder, is it different than the attitude you find in the music around? Do you carry an attitude from this music into your life, into your lives? Does it make you think differently, see differently?
Well, I think this conversational aspect you just heard in the Haydn, that's a very ingrained thing for humans, social interaction. And that's the great thing about playing in a string quartet is there's the layer that's in the music, but then there's a whole another level when we get together and we use our instruments to communicate with each other and to have a conversation. And we hope that that spontaneity comes out to the listener so they appreciate music as part of life and not just as an art that's inaccessible.
You make it so real for us right here in the studio, and from there right out across the country and beyond. People will listen to this all over the world, and what a treat. It's just been great to have you. We're so grateful to you for everything you've put into your own musicianship and for sort of turning it around and telling us the story in words and with your beautiful strings and bows today. Emily Dahl, Lisa Goddard, Zoe Kemmerling, Emily Davidson, Emergence Quartet, thank you very much for coming in. Just wonderful to have you. Just wonderful.
Thanks for having
us.
It's been a pleasure.
How terrific. We'll go out with a little more Haydn, String Quartet number 4, G major, 4th movement, the Minuetto. Think Minuet. Listeners, enjoy. Thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.